Thank you for coming back to us. This is Children Come First, WAAT, 7:50 a.m. on your radio dial. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here this morning with Dr. Ronald Boyanowski from the Southern Tioga School District, and we're talking about restructuring and redesigning the school system for a better education for our children. And Dr. Boyanowski, you were telling us some things about Southern Tioga which were absolutely fascinating. It's a rural school district, and you certainly have kept some of the most positive elements that we have discovered existed 100 years ago in the school districts of yesterday, of the one-room schoolhouses. You've kept a real community base, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about your community attitudes through community involvement. What kinds of things do you do in Southern Tioga School District? Dr. Boyanowski?
Yes, I believe your question, Daria, is one that is important in making any entity successful, and even more important in making our school successful, because we're dealing with the youth of our nation, and all parents and adults are concerned about our youth and where our nation is going in the future. But it's been my impression that larger school districts, they lose the identity or the relationship between parent and school. So as a result, parents are much more aggressive in approaching their schools because of the lack of understanding. It's almost like a we and them kind of relationship. But we have a very large volunteer program in our schools, and on any one day you can enter our elementary schools or secondary schools, and you will see many adults that are not teachers working with teachers to promote the education of our children. And in some of our elementary schools, you may see five adults in one classroom. Some of those will be volunteers from the local university. Some will be volunteers from the local community, or some through human services that providers to support our children. But the important part about this relationship is not only more hands and more support for the children, it's what I believe is giving the public insight, or the proper insight, about what really is happening in our schools. Because I don't believe that our public schools or schools across our nation are bad. There are some situations that have been reflected most recently that have made the news that give the impression that public schools are bad, but they're not. There's many good things are happening in our schools, and I believe that community attitude could be changed if we bring the community into our schools so they can be carriers of good information rather than rumor. And we've been very successful with that in our district.
How have you been able to maintain volunteers? I'm sure many of the people who are listening to this broadcast want to know, how did you bring those people into the community? By what means did you encourage them to participate?
We have a senior citizens volunteer program, which we advertise to encourage senior citizens to support the education of our children in the schools. And of course, as you know, senior citizens have a wealth of knowledge and information about the world that they can share with our children.
And you are the second oldest state in the United States with regard to senior citizens.
Right. And also, when we talk about that fiscal management, senior citizens, even though their children had that turn, are not always quite interested in fiscally supporting the schools as they may have been in the past. And so we also have a grandparents program, which we invite grandparents for breakfast and lunches to encourage them to see inside of our schools and to think about volunteering. We have young people who volunteer. We have a group that's called PALS, which senior high students go to our elementary schools and and volunteer to support not only the educational program, but to be a pal with this, the younger children, and to model good behavior and good educational activities with them. And, of course, community service by our high school students is another effort in which they volunteer in our schools.
I was about to ask you that. Is that part of the curriculum?
Yes, it is. And they, high school students may receive credit, even though credits have changed a bit in the state. That attitude of the Carnegie credit or a certain number of credits for graduation are still required, and the state does recognize community service as some of those credits for graduation.
Now, how have you been able to, one of the critical issues that impedes educational progress is the attitude of the community towards education, and most people, especially in this state, seem to have, obviously minus Southern Tioga School District, tend to have a negative attitude towards school because there is not this relationship between school and community. You seem to have created a fluid infrastructure where the community comes to you and where you go to the community by way of your students volunteering in community projects. Do you feel that this is an important, these are important elements that need to be looked at in terms of how the attitude of the state in towards education, it can become in more of a positive light? And how would you encourage larger schools to create this fluidity between community and school community, school culture?
That's a very difficult question when we you ask the question in terms of what larger school districts can do, because sometimes I think we're just lost in the bigness that exists there. Some way larger schools need to decentralize and create a better and greater identity between school and community. But in our communities, and we have difficulties that maybe aren't recognized that are similar to larger school districts, and that is, in a larger school district, you have this difficulty with identity, but you have so many people and you have so many opportunities for students. But by being rural, we have to search for some of these opportunities for our students, and children need to be transported to these areas. For instance, now with the holidays upon us, our high school choruses and bands will be transported to the senior citizens' homes and nursing homes. They will perform for local service clubs, whether it might be Rotary or Kiwanis. I think it's very important for our communities to see our youth, our young people, because I truly believe that our youth are better, they're stronger, they're better educated, they're healthier than ever before. We hear some complain about our youth, but they're really, really wonderful people, and we need to get the youth out in the community to work with community to see how good they are, and vice versa of what we're doing in our schools. And we have made this one of our major goals in the Southern Tioga School District, and it creates a very good relationship.
Well, I think the media, especially in the state of Pennsylvania, has done a tremendous disservice to education. They think nothing of putting something negative on the front pages of the newspaper, but when it comes to all the positive that exists, it rarely, if ever, shows up, and when it does, it tends to have either negative subtitles or the first paragraph is negative. So I believe that what you are doing in terms of having your children out in the community and the community in your school is probably one of the greatest examples of positive marketing and public relations that any school district can do in its community. Whether large or small, it's really a wonderful, wonderful opportunity And what happens is taxpayers feel like they are getting a return on their investment. They see their children firsthand in the community. They have an opportunity to speak with them, interact with them. And it's something, especially, I really value your senior volunteer program and your grandparent program, because I think we have lost, our generations have lost the ability to connect with senior citizens. And as you said, the wealth of wisdom that they carry with them. We've just allowed them to be in nursing homes and kind of tucked away and forgotten about them, and they are the bridge between our youth and the continuum. And many older cultures and many ancient civilizations value their senior citizens. And I really applaud you for that program, especially because I really believe that it is the connecting link for our children.
Let me comment, if I may, Daria, about the media, respond to your comment about the media. It is unfortunate that the media wishes to place on the front page the negative happenings in public schools or happenings in our communities, and for some reason they think that that's what we like to read and that's what sells papers. And we certainly aren't completely escaped of that happening here in our school district. There are times that the press will grab a particular question and they publish that question in terms of an impression that they have. But it doesn't mean you can't call the editor, you can't go visit the editor. But on the other side, what we have done to create some kind of balance with the media is that we invite the media into our schools every week to take pictures of education programs, to take pictures of athletic events, to talk with teachers, to take pictures of the school. And also our journalism classes have a short piece on our local radios, and they talk about what's happening in our schools and how well the students are doing. So we certainly, I wish we were perfect and publicizing what we are doing in our schools and that all our press is positive, but at least we're trying to keep a balance.
Well, it sounds to me like you're doing a good job, and also the media, especially the television, tends to give a very negative view of senior citizens. I mean, there's hardly a program that or a movie that doesn't go by that doesn't give a negative perception of seniors. And what's happening with your school district is that the students are getting a totally different picture of children, of senior citizens from firsthand knowledge. So again, I applaud you on that. You alluded a while back ago, by the way, my other philosophy about selling newspapers with negative publicity is that it certainly does not assist our communities in instilling pride when we deal with all the negative in the community rather than the positive things. And I think more importantly, I've seen it here locally in one of the newspapers here in this area. They've done an insert in their newspaper that's community-based in every community, and it's all the pride of the community. And I think that really sends a message to the constituents, and they sell more newspapers that way, by the way.
Right.
That
certainly they do.
And, you know, they think nothing of having a quarter of the newspaper dedicated to the sports, which is all fine and well, but why don't we, if children come first and education is important to us, then we really need to have a quarter of the newspaper dedicated to education.
That's
and the
right.
Positive things that are happening in education.
That's right, and I certainly believe the public would buy the newspapers if, in fact, the youth their success was emphasized rather than negative aspects.
You're listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski, WAAT 750 AM on your radio dial. We're here every Tuesday, and today we're here with Dr. Ronald Boyanowski, the superintendent of Southern Tioga School District, and we're talking about the wonderful things that are happening in Southern Tioga School District. And I didn't want to let this slide, but you mentioned it quite earlier in our conversation when we were talking about fiscal management, and I always, every time I have the opportunity to talk about it, I don't believe that the public really understands how legislators create legislation that's unmandated fiscally, but mandated legislatively in terms of this handicap nightmare that they've created for school districts. And, you know, we talk about how the state, for example, the state just put out a little flyer there on how much they spend per child, which was something like $7,600 per child. But what most parents don't understand is that we are now, through handicap legislation, spending $60,000 to $100,000 per handicapped child, which doesn't leave us very much for the other children in the school district. And so that number of $7,800 is really a misnomer to parents. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about fiscally managing this handicap legislation that's been passed down to you.
Let me first statement that I believe that children with disabilities should be in our public schools. That's the best place for them to receive an education. And I suspect that most school districts in Pennsylvania, and I know that at least in the Southern Tigers School District, we've welcomed the opportunity to work with these children. And we work on an inclusive basis, which means that they're included in the regular classroom, and they are given support by the teacher aid and other resources to be successful. And every child should have equal opportunity, and that means it being part of the mainstream. It's a great opportunity for other children to learn about those with disabilities, and it's a great opportunity for those with disabilities to learn from children who do not have those disabilities. However, Pennsylvania, probably like other states, you mentioned about legislation that creates costs for school districts that we can't control. Special education in Pennsylvania is one. And I don't believe the state has fulfilled its commitment in providing the resources that local communities need to provide education to special children. Several years back, Pennsylvania had a program in which the funding was somewhat sufficient, and there was a formula called excess cost for educating these special children. But what the state found was that the cost for educating special children was very high, and as a result, there had budget problems in providing this education. There became a very, very big deficit in the special education budget. So as a result, they moved and encourage the school districts to go in the direction of inclusion, which is wonderful. But with that, they transferred the responsibility of funding to local school districts and have not supported the special programs as they have in the past. The result is the state of Pennsylvania, as is said by many legislators, has a big surplus, a big budget surplus, $70 million or more. But the reason they've been able to develop that surplus is because they've transferred the fiscal responsibility of education to local school districts. The agreement or the plan for funding school districts in the state originally was supposed to be a 50-50. Well, the state is down in the 30% area in their support of public school education. And so I don't believe that, as I said before, that money is always the answer, but there are costs associated to children who have hearing impairments, children who are ADHD, or children who need learning support that are beyond what school districts have at the local level. And I think if you would ask any superintendent in the state of Pennsylvania, they would tell you that this is the area that we're struggling in, the area of fiscal management.
Don't you deal a lot with litigation as well with this handicap legislation, which is driving the costs upward?
Absolutely. The new IDEA, Individuals with Disability Education Act, which is federally has been federally legislated has created a process that every child has a right, or if a child is suspected to have some very minor disability, they must be tested. And so if that process is not followed carefully, it ends up in arbitration or some form of litigation. Daria, I have been superintendent of school for 16 years, and when I first became superintendent, we used to put $5,000 or $7,000 in our budget for litigation. And now $200,000 is not nearly enough.
Isn't it amazing? I have to sort of inject a personal note here, and that is that I think we've certainly become the extreme again, which is generally what this nation does. I spent all of my life dyslexic, not knowing in those days what dyslexia was, but my parents recognized that I had a problem and couldn't quite figure out what it was. And I learned to adapt and adjust. I mean, I have my degrees and my education. I have successful businesses. And don't you think that we've become the extreme in this country for diagnosing every sometimes natural? I mean, who is perfect in this country if we really looked at our children? And it's, and I'm not taking away from the serious kinds of ailments and physical handicaps of children who need to be in wheelchairs and need support in those ways, but haven't we made some of our illnesses into natural kinds of behaviors, especially at the psychological levels?
I would agree, and probably my statement will not be popular, but I believe we've come up with many titles for children that is the result of the lack of nurturing in this society, so that if a child doesn't perform, whether it's due to his behavior or whatever it might be, we have now developed a title. And years ago, we not only could not afford those titles, but society would not accept those. And as a result, you went on and became successful in spite of some of the difficulties that you had to overcome. And the titles today are unbelievable.
And now we're proud of our titles because they now explain a behavior that's, we call attention deficit disorder, children who are in need of attention.
Right. Right, and the attention, I believe, is not occurring at home, that there's not the nurturing, there's not the support in the home of the child, so the child is acting out. And the difficulty is that somehow I believe that some parents, now parenting is still very good in this country, but some parents need to be more responsible for the growth of their children. And that the growth of the child cannot be the total responsibility of our schools.
Well, I think that's what I think. I kind of tend to disagree with you in terms of the fact that I've been exposed to many parents both at the educational level and the therapeutic level, and I would say that parenting is not a priority in this country. And in fact, it's, we have children, but do we really take care of them, and do we really accept responsibility for them? I've been in the prisons, I've been in many different places, and I don't get the impression that as much as two generations ago, parents definitely took, and the community took, a much more responsive role in the needs of the children, whereas today, it doesn't seem to be as significant. I mean, we have so many single-parent families, up to 50% in rural areas and almost 60% in our cities, in our major cities, and we have children wandering the streets in front of televisions, going home without, we really have, our country has really not taken responsibility in terms of parental roles, in my estimation, and has tried to sway that responsibility and redirect it to the schools, and saying the schools should be responsible, or medical institutions, or and education is no longer an instructional model. It's now a medical model. It's a legislative model. It's everything but an instructional model. You've become, educators and educational institutions have become the be-all and end-all, the panacea of our not being responsible as parents, in my estimation.
I concur. I do believe there are still many parents that are doing their job and they're good parents, but there's no question that the number of parents that are not supporting their children or the communities and themselves that are not supporting children are greater than ever before. We call, you mentioned one-parent families. We call them, and maybe it's not a fair terminology, but it's one that's used within the system, as dysfunctional families, because the child has difficulty due to some kind of family dysfunction. And even in our area, and I have great faith in education and great faith in our youth, that in a kindergarten class of 21 or 22 students, that 15 or 14 of those students will come from dysfunctional families.
Wow, that's a very high percentage. And what you have literally done in the environment that you've created in your school district, you've created a community environment where those children are getting opportunities to see senior citizens or your grandparent program where they probably do not have that opportunity, and also get some nurturing from those senior citizens where they probably don't get a lot at home. As having been a single parent myself, not by choice, it was very difficult working all day and going home and taking care of children at night, and especially if they were sick.
Very good job. And that was my point earlier. Some do not. Some, where there's not a single parent, where there are two parents in the home, still are not giving their children the attention that they should. Let me just make a comment, if I may, about your statement of the expectation of our schools today, that there's no longer an education model. I was recently reading an article in the Kappa magazine from Phi Delta Kappa, comparing U.S. education and German education, and the article stated that it's like apples and sauerkraut, and European education, that there are no extensive athletic programs, there are no extensive food service programs, there are no after-school programs, there are no all of the programs that we deal with the ills of society that has broaden the curriculum. In Europe, it's a pure academic model, and that's what European educators are responsible for. Now, if the goal of the United States is to provide for all needs of our youth, then I believe we have the right model. But if we are going to compare the United States to European education, then it's like comparing apples and sauerkraut, because they have an education model, and we have a model that hopefully complements the needs, all the needs of our children.
Yes, we tend in America to, and I don't say this positively, by the way, we tend to make our schools the people who function by fulfilling the deficits that we as a society do not enable in our children. And so you have the tremendous burden and responsibility that educators have is not only instructional, but every level from medical, emotional, and everything else. And I think our audience and our nation does not even understand. You know, we look and compare us to other countries as far as testing scores and other kinds of things, but we don't recognize the fact that we've asked teachers and administrators in this country to do things far and beyond any other country has ever done before.
That's true.
And I acknowledge you for that. I've been on that end of the spectrum where I have been a teacher, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it, and I really respect the people who can. In the last 2 minutes of our program here, Dr. Boyanowski, if you'd like to sum up or talk to us about anything that's summation of the Southern Tioga School District or something that we haven't covered, I'll give you this next 2 minutes to do that.
Okay. I would be pleased to have that opportunity. And what I would like to make some final comments about is we talked about expectations of our schools. And I suspect you, as many others in the field, have read some of Ted Sizer's writings out of Brown University.
Yes.
And his theme is that...
The essential schools movement.
And that when we talk about all of those things that have come into our public schools and that we have diluted the mission of our public schools, as at least we're compared to European schools, that we need to start thinking differently. And I mentioned about community attitude and impression of our public schools and tradition, that we need to let our schools turn the corner with the coming of the new millennium, that we need to understand that less can be more. For example, in Japan, in a 8th grade science class, they teach 8 basic functions. We teach 118 basic functions. And so as a result, we're with the world becoming so large and so full of knowledge that we continue to throw more and more at our students without them gaining an understanding. So I believe what the message that I would like to share in the last few minutes is that we need to look positive at our schools. We need to understand that schools need to change. They can't be like when I went to school or when you went to school. You often hear that. Well, it was good enough for me. It ought to be good enough for the children today. The world has changed significantly. Technology is upon us, and you have to be very knowledgeable in that area to be successful today. What we learn and how we learn today has changed. If we learn 8 basic concepts in science, then know where to access the areas of science.